Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST. We are Baltimore Positive. We are at Lexington Market. We are at Fadley's. It smells good. I'm not in a hurry to get this over with. I know Ron's on a limited schedule. Ron Shapiro was with us, but we are going to...
What a surprise. He's a busy man.
When we left you, and I want to jump right back into the... Give me the power of nice over there. And win-win relationships is what my memory of all of this was. A good negotiations, one where you shake hands, you've developed a relationship you can use later in life, and everybody walks away feeling like friends or whatever that would be.
So let me talk a little bit about the power of nice. Maybe I named it, though. I really should have called it empower yourself with the system in these pages, and you can be nice, and in the end have great relationships with people on the other side of the table. And that's really what it's about. So I want to be clear. A lot of people praise me for being the power of nice guy, and they put the emphasis on nice. Let's remember, the Orioles gave Cal Ripken the biggest contract in history at the time. The Twins gave Kirby Puckett the biggest contract in history at the time. These are clients of mine. The Twins gave Maurer the biggest contract, aside from Rodriguez at the time.
The Giants gave John Miller
So we get good contracts. It's just a question of understanding that in order to get what you want in life, think about what they want too and give them something too and work in a collaborative way. But it's also, Nestor, about being systematic. And in the book, and we're not going to go into it now, are what I call the three P's.
I'll go into it.
Prepare, probe, and propose. And what makes me a good negotiator is that I follow those steps. And I was just yesterday with a leader at Johns Hopkins Medical School, and he was talking about how the power of nice has guided him in his life and how he came to realize it wasn't just being a nice guy and having good relationships. It was getting where you want to go by being systematic, which means if you're systematic, you don't have to play the art of the deal game, which is kill them, get them, you know,
bully them.
Bully them. Or be fearful of them. Some people are the other side of the table. You don't have to be fearful and you don't have to be aggressive. You have to be systematic. Do you follow me? Systematic allows you then to achieve win-win deals, which then allow you to build relationships.
Well, I would say at this point, after all my Tony Robbins trainings, I'd say this is where emotions take over, because emotions are what sometimes cause you to not be systematic, to not be rational, to not be fair, right?
And that's why I wrote another book called Bullies, Tyrants, and Impossible People, How to Beat Them Without Joining Them. And the key to that book and the thing that has won it so much praise is there's a little system in there. So rather than react emotionally to someone when they go after you, put that system in play. It's called NICE, nice. Neutralize your emotions. You know, don't get personal and don't take it personally.
I love that I got the first one first.
And then identify. And I won't
go through. Please go through nice.
The second one is identify the source of why they're that way. Some people are situationally that way. They've had a bad day. They're going to lose their job. Some people are strategically that way. A lot of lawyers play that game. And some people.
I know one that owns the Orioles.
Some people are simply that way. Some people say our president is that way. But the point I want to make is, it's, you know, find out why. And then you go to C, which is control the encounter. And depending on which they are, there are methodologies. I can't go into them now, which respond to that. And E, end without escalating and explore options. Let me give you one quick example. I work with a group of kids in the Middle East called Peace Players. They're Palestinian kids and they're Israeli Jewish kids, okay? They should normally, like we see, they should be fighting with each other. They should be shooting at
throwing
each other.
Bricks.
They were bred ideologically to be that way.
So with using basketball, we brought these kids together from age 5 years old, kindergarten kids. We give them each a basketball. They get into a program. Last year or 2 years ago, they won the Israeli championship. First time a mixed Arab-Jewish team ever won, the girls, on the girls' side. But one of those girls who I've worked closely with and who my wife and I have worked with to help educate a little bit wrote me a letter, and she said, Ron, I got to tell you a story. Last summer, you taught us bullies, tyrants, that neutralized thing. Now, in Israel, if you're Palestinian, you have to go through checkpoints. The Israelis use it for security reasons, but it's humiliating to a lot of Palestinians, and there's a lot of tension there. And she said, I decided I would approach the checkpoint differently this year. I would go and I would smile rather than give them my pass and be angry. And now, this isn't going to change everybody, but she said, I gave them it with a smile. And the lady, the lady soldier looked at me and looked me up and down and said, wow, you're beautiful. Gave me back my pass and said, go through. It was the quickest pass through I've ever had. Now, guys, it's not going to bring world peace. But Doha is her name. She neutralized her emotions. She didn't go in negative. She didn't take it personally or get personal. And she was able to short circuit a negative reaction on the other side. So that's, again, well, I believe...
That'll add years to your life.
Well, Ron, when you're telling...
In your personal life,
it will,
too.
It will add years to your life. Sure.
When you're telling that story, I'm struck by... I told Nestor, I reread Power of Nice this week. I probably read it now five times, reread it again, learned something every time. Just an outstanding book. I'm thinking about your story, Palestinians and the Israeli kids. There was a story in your book about where the commissioner of the Baltimore City Police Department and a colonel under him were, I mean, not privately fighting.
Publicly.
I mean,
front page news.
It was
front page
ugly.
News.
And I looked at
one
that.
One was white and one was black. One,
I mean,
okay.
It had all of the components of being a very, very difficult.
Yep.
And I'm looking at this, and the next thing I know, Ron Shapiro's wife is baking cookies in Ron Shapiro's house, and somehow, over the course of the evening, these guys come to, they don't end up being best buddies, as you said. They don't, but walk us through that.
There's a couple of pieces to understand. So the mayor at the time was Kurt Schmoke. He called me and said, I got a problem. These guys are killing each other, and the police department's disabled. What can I do? I said, give them to me. And if you don't mind, let them cross the city line, because I lived on a farm out in the country. Let them come out. Well, you know what's really interesting? The day starts with, I look at them driving up the driveway, and they're both in the same car. I figure, wow, I got them together in a car. That's a beginning, okay?
That's pretty amazing.
So it took 2 days of meetings, and it was really about practicing the three Ps. I learned everything I could about the commissioner. I learned everything I could about the colonel, the police chief and the colonel. And then I probed. And here's the key to unlocking the problem. When I probed, which is asking questions, why do you feel this way? Why, Commissioner, and lots of questions, by the way, so I don't want to short circuit this. He said, I feel this way because I'm military. And people don't make demands
line
in newspapers.
Of command.
Line, and I expect to be treated that way. And I expect someone to say, sir, would it be possible for us to consider this rather than we want all the records and we got to do this and that. And you know what? I looked at the colonel. I said, Colonel, how do we handle this? And he said, sir, could I? And so ask questions. Well, along the way, I asked Kathy, my wife, to bring some cookies over.
And so for, I love that.
And she brings cookies in, and that adds a little sweetness to the atmosphere. But again, I used the system. I didn't game the system. The system's about common sense.
Preach it, practice it, right?
Ask questions and listen to people. Let them vent. Let them talk. But listen, because you'll find out things that you can use to help settle the dispute. And the rest of the story is we ate cookies and they settled.
And the flip side of that is, in the book, you talk about an early negotiation, and it still blows me away when I look back at Brooks's top salary is $100,000. The Orioles try to cut it to 80. You're negotiating with Hank Peters.
What a great guy.
And you say at that time, you actually own some of the mistakes. You said, I didn't probe.
Oh, yeah. Well, no. What I did was, I felt affronted. First negotiation I ever had in baseball. I felt affronted that the Orioles cut their legend
from
100 to 80. But it was his last year. He had declining skills, and they did it. It was the maximum cut you could give. So I did all the research, and I showed how Brooks impacted on crowds and what Brooks meant to the team and all this. And I went in, and I made the greatest I thought it was like a report in school for your teacher.
You thought you were going to win.
And I said, Hank, and I laid it out. And I was so excited with everything I said, and I looked across and said, Hank, now, aren't you convinced that this is the right thing? And Hank looked across at me, and he said, Ron, I'll get back to you. I'll get back to you. Well, I just, Hank taught me the most important lesson, and that is, before you start saying, ask, listen, learn. Hank knew everything about me. I knew nothing about his position. And so I tell, Hank and I did 300 or 400 negotiations. Now, we knew each other pretty well by the end. In fact, at the end of his career, he asked me whether I would guide him personally, and we became dear friends, and I gave the eulogy at his funeral. And the bottom line is that there's a lot to be learned about how you do it. It's not just what you say, it's how you say it and how you get there.
Well, Ron, people would be, I mean, that's
a great lesson.
When you just say that you gave the eulogy at Hank Peters' funeral, again, my mind is racing because I'm trying to capture what is this Ron Shapiro and the Ron Shapiro world, per se, in terms of how to approach it, that you could be in. At times, these negotiations were contentious, I'm assuming, or
well,
I don't know if that's the right word.
You not the right word. Contentious with Hank, because he was so soft-spoken. But at times, there were real differences. And you know, we looked like we would go like that. But, you know, and by the way, I didn't get what I wanted. I got it later. Oh, this is how relationships are important. He said the owner insisted that Brooks get 80. But later, we had such a good negotiation that Hank and I started to develop a relationship. I started to represent other players. Came the fall, the Orioles had to they had to open a roster spot to bring up Dempsey, I think. Hank calls me and says, would Brooks go off the roster for a day or two? I say, Hank, maybe he would, but let me ask you about that negotiation. He said, Ron, we're going to restore the full 100,000. Now, we could not, later on, have repaired to get where we wanted and get where he wanted without a relationship. So relationships, that's why you want to do deals in a way where you don't burn the bridge. You want a bridge to be able to go over to solve problems.
Well,
my
favorite example, Ron, and I had to read it twice the other day, actually was mentioning it, I think I mentioned it to Nestor last night, was your story in the book about the Hunt's ketchup or Hunt's pizza sauce people and Pizza Hut.
You're better read on the book than I am at this point. I've read too many other books since, but that was all about sometimes no deal is the best deal. I mean, we couldn't make a deal, or Hunt Pizza Hut could no longer use the sauce that they used from Hunt's or whoever it was, Heinz or whoever it was.
Whatever which one.
Yeah, you know, and because of the pricing and whatever. But, you know, the people were advised, don't tell them to go to hell. Don't tell them.
Which is your instinct. You've had the account for a long time.
You're all of a sudden, you're charging me this.
Right.
It was just tell them we'll come
anger,
back.
Anger, frustration, right? Those are first instincts for a lot of people.
You want them to pay for the sauce what they should pay. But they went to alternative sources of supply, and all of a sudden people were in Pizza Hut, and they were eating pizza with sauce running off of the crust. And so they came back, and they said, please, let's put it back together. Let's figure out a way to do it. Again, sometimes no deal is the best deal, but even if you do a no deal, do it in a way where you have a relationship at the end, because you don't know what's going to happen later.
Well, part of that, Ron, the part, and again, I mentioned it to Nestor, because I'm thinking, man, this is not the way most people would react. Now Pizza Hut knows they're over a barrel. They come back. They know that the company can really give it, you know, really hold them up, really stick it to them.
And they don't stick it to them.
And they give them the same. They say, what's the price now? Yeah, and they say, it's the same as it was, because it was fair then, and it's fair now.
You know, doing business, solving political problems, solving social problems, solving family differences is about taking the time to be thoughtful in terms of getting the information you need to address something, but not destroying the other side.
Wow.
And that's where we're off the track in the world
now.
That's where we're off the track politically. You know, there's another thing in the book. I had Cal, the cartoonist, we commissioned him to do a cartoon. And there's a cartoon in the book of two figures in suits in the Congress. But one's a donkey and one's an elephant. And they're killing each other. And, you know, it's this politics of polarization,
no.
This game that's been created is undoing us to some
extent. These silos. You can get nothing done.
And you know, there are times in our history. There's a great book by John Meacham called Soul of America. I suggest
you read it. Thankfully. Well, I read it because Ron said to me, when Ron Shapiro says to me, you need to read this book, I order it that day.
It invokes the words of Lincoln appealing to our better angels. And it's about these times in history where we were poles apart. You know, in the Congress in the 19th century, congressmen would cane each other. They'd beat each other up. I mean, we see it happen in other countries now. Well, we're not caning each other physically, but we're caning each other intellectually.
Spiritually.
And spiritually, and we're pulling each other down. But you know, it's kind of like Baltimore. I'm one of these glass half full guys.
Nellie Forbush.
We're gonna have to figure out a way to find our way out. If we have another polarized election like we have, it's not going to be in my lifetime. Right. But hopefully, for the sake of my children and grandchildren, it's in their lifetime.
Let's come back. I want to talk about Ron's family, his children, the amazing things they're doing.
You're not going to let me not talk about baseball with him, right?
No, I knew an hour wouldn't be enough. But we got we'll talk baseball and Ron's children when we come back. Where are we? Fadley's?
We're Fadley's in Lexington Market. He's Don Moeller, Ron Shapiro here. We are Baltimore Positive, WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore Positive and Baltimore Sports.